It's the 2011 Virginia Film Festival, the first day, Thursday. I'm sitting here across from filmmaker Doug Berry. And Doug, before we get to your film this year, you've been a friend of the festival for a while. Remind our listeners what they may have seen you in before.
Yeah, I came here in late 2003 with a movie called Cold Readings, which wasn't cut together yet, but it was shot. Mm-hmm. And talked to the then festival director, Richard Herskowitz, and he said, bring it by my office. And he looked at it and he said, I think you need an editor. He hooked me up with one, and we made a much better movie out of it. And so in 2004 was our first entry into the Virginia Film Festival with Cold Readings.
And that screened at Vinegar Hill, didn't it?
It sure did.
I remember seeing it there, sure.
And then we had a screening in 2008 with a documentary short called My Day with Conrad, and it's about the last surviving guy from the infamous Plan 9 from Outer Space film. He lives in a trailer in West Virginia, and I got to go up and spend a day and talk to this guy who obviously was heavily related to Ed Wood, one of my childhood heroes, even though I didn't know it at the time. So,
and now another local filmmaker, Johnny Johnson, is doing a remake.
He sure is. Right. He's doing Plan 9, and I'm in it.
Excellent.
I'm in it. I have a small part in that movie.
Well, you should.
I've known John for a long time. So I think I actually met John way back probably 2004, 2005, when the film community started to come together a little bit, and people mm-hmm. started, instead of working independently, maybe thinking, oh, so-and-so likes to edit, maybe I should let them edit, instead of me doing all the work. And so we started getting a little bit collective and got a little smarter.
Right. So we've plugged someone else's film. Well, let's talk about your film. You have a documentary called Growing Up Quezon, which airs Saturday at 1 p.m., also at Vinegar Hill. And this is a documentary about a very local documentary about a local family.
It's a Charlottesville family history is how I would describe it. And it's a group of seven brothers and one sister mm-hmm. who started their lives during the Great Depression right here in Charlottesville on a big farm out off of Stony Point Road. And they had no plumbing, no electricity, had a lot of food because they had things to grow and they had animals to use for meat. But other than that, it was pretty tough. And as the older one said, you know, we were poor, but we didn't know we were poor.
Right.
And they didn't have television, and they didn't have all those kind of things. So they were very inventive, like buying pieces of dynamite at the local hardware store and setting it off in the forest when Dad wasn't around kind of stuff. So a lot of humorous stories from these people. All seven brothers, when World War II broke out, went to World War II, mm-hmm. enlisted, and all came back.
Oh, that's the amazing thing. You just read right over that. All seven brothers went out to World War II.
And came back to roost in Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. Didn't even spread out from this community. All married hometown girls. Mm-hmm. Four of them started the famous City Market.
City Market, which still runs now on Saturdays.
And some of them, you'll still catch them down there. There's still a couple that you'll see from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
So
how did you meet the Quezon family? What are the origins of this?
I had a personal family friend who came to us, and he said, I have a woman who works for me in my store, and she's connected to this family that I think you might be interested in talking to. So through the niece, I was able to get in touch with one of the wives of one of the brothers. And I had a long talk with her on the phone where I kind of convinced her that I wasn't there to get money or to do anything nefarious. And once I kind of won her over, she said, okay, I'll let you talk to my husband. I sat down with him and I said, tell me about your life. He was done in 3 minutes. I was born, this is my name, and I'm done. And as I packed up the camera, he said, oh, well, this is one other thing. And then he talked for 3 hours without stopping.
Right.
And once I got that first one, every other one fell into line and said, yes, I'd love to do this. Now, it took me a year and a half to get all the interviews because I did multiple interviews with all of them. But that's how it kind of evolved.
So tell me about the editing process. After you've talked to, you talked to seven, eight more family members?
Oh, yeah. I talked to a lot of people. And so what I ended up doing was I rough cut the movie together with all the stuff that I thought was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Had about an 8-hour running length. And I said, okay, I don't think they're going to take that. So let me see if I can pare this down. So really, it was a case of I watched it every day, and each day, as a part became a little less interesting to me because I'd heard it 4 or 5 times, I'd say, all right, that goes.
Mm-hmm.
So what we really wound up was a 99-minute movie of kind of the greatest hits, and there's so much more stuff I would have loved to have put in, but I think what we got in there really serves it well, and I think they come across great.
Oh, maybe these will be bonus discs on the DVD.
You never know.
So how many of your documentary film ideas come to you from... friends approaching you or people walking up to you and saying, you're a filmmaker, this is something you should know about.
That's probably the second or third time that's happened. And that's great because, you know, you can't be aware of everything. But a lot of stories I see on my own. And I say, oh, that looks like an interesting story, and you kind of follow it up. And it's pretty amazing. I got to meet Albert Maysles, probably the greatest living documentary maker in the world.
Right.
And he was here a couple of years ago for a screening, and I got to speak with him afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I remember him giving me advice and saying, you know, you have the beauty of when I was coming up, it was these little 10-minute film reels. And if you didn't get it in that 10 minutes and something happened in between, and 10 minutes isn't a long time to get people to kind of open up.
And then just when they start to open up, you have to stop and change film.
Exactly. Right.
And he said, you have this beautiful ability to tape for an hour, 2 hours nonstop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he said, my advice to you is don't ask questions. Just sit there and let them talk. And he said, after about 5 or 10 minutes, you will be amazed what comes out of their mouths. The family historian who appears in the film quite a lot, I remember when she looked at a lot of the raw interviews, she said, how did you get them to say all these things? We've always wanted to hear these stories, but they don't tell us. And I was like, I didn't say anything. Just let them speak. But they're all a cast of characters. And
well, just between you and me, you just stumbled across my secret for doing interviews, too.
Really? Well, see, and you did well. You hardly talked at all.
So you're here. You're in Charlottesville. You're a Charlottesville filmmaker.
We actually live out of, in Stantonsville, but we spend a lot of time in Charlottesville.
That's close enough.
And we're very involved with the film community here. So.
Hey, this is going national, you know.
So, oh, yeah.
So for people on the West Coast, you know, Stantonsville is Charlottesville.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, it's a little better to be on the outskirts because then when they come to try to find me, it'll be harder to find. As the fans try to knock down the door.
So, any other upcoming projects?
I'm working on a movie about a woman who I call the Angel Woman, and this is another case of someone called me up and said, I've met this woman who I think you would find very interesting, and she's elderly, sharp as a tack, has had this varied life, but the reason I went to see her was she had this big collection of angels. Supposedly one of the biggest collections anywhere.
And does she keep them all in the head of a pin?
No, she does not, Sean. But I went to her house, and she left them set up for me after Christmas. She normally takes them down after the holiday season. But she knew I was coming. She left them up. And there wasn't an inch that you could look at in this house that didn't have an angel in it.
Hmm.
There's hundreds, hundreds, hundreds of them. But then, as I started interviewing this woman over and over and found out what an interesting life she had, the angels kind of became just sort of a subset of what I was interested in. So that's a documentary I'm in the middle of right now, working on that.
Thanks.
And I'm doing a screenplay for one of the local film groups. It's a Wolfman social drama, but I won't go any further than that.
Wolfman social drama.
With some comedy thrown in, of course.
Okay, so like a teenage wolf on Twitter.
Oh, I'm not going to tell you, Sean. I'm not going to tell you now.
Okay, all right. Well, so your film, Growing Up Kayson,
yep.
Screens tomorrow?
Yep.
Excuse me, screens Saturday, 1 o'clock p.m. Well, if people listen to this Friday, it'll be tomorrow. Really? Saturday, 1 o'clock p.m. in Vinegar Hill. And you're going to be a discussant afterwards.
I will be there for
the
Q&A. Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to seeing it. I look forward to seeing you around.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Doug.
Appreciate it. Thanks
Thank
a lot.
You.